Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 12 of the Ball 5 podcast. The podcast is starting to get into the March Madness mood. I've been watching, I know this is a baseball podcast, but I have been watching like nothing but conference tournaments for the past week. In fact, if you want to know what time we're recording at, I'll date myself by just saying that, hey, Merrimack just won the Northeastern Conference Championship against Fairleigh Dickinson. So congrats to Merrimack. But regardless, my name is DJ Lopes. I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Lopes. Chris, how you doing?
I am doing very well. I am. I think I have to wait until the actual March Madness happens in order for me to really get absorbed. But once it's there, I get absorbed. So.
Yeah, no, I'm just a complete sicko. I have been watching low mid-major basketball for the past week. I considered getting an ESPN Plus sponsorship. Although if ESPN Plus wants to sponsor us, then sure. But I've been considering getting an ESPN Plus, thing for like the past week, and that would literally be just to watch like the 13 seed versus the 12 seed in the America East face off.
Hey, but you could also watch college baseball.
You could also get
into the Razorbacks. You know, they're rolling right now. So,
well, my alma mater. My alma mater Hofstra did make it to the College World Series, at least the regionals last year. So things could be still looking up for them.
Are they D1?
Yeah, they're D1. Oh, cool. Colonial Athletic Association, baby. But yeah, so enough about all that. We did slightly get onto baseball, which is obviously what this podcast is about. But first, I've been mentioning it at the end of podcasts, but I realize that is the dumbest way to market a podcast, to put something at the very end. So I'm going to put it at the very beginning. Be sure to give us 5 stars on Spotify, Apple, however you give out 5 stars to things. Check us out on social media at Instagram and Twitter at Ball5Pod. You can follow me at DJ_Lopes9 and Twitter. I forget what Chris's is all the time, but Chris can enlighten me right now.
Psh, I forget what mine is all the time. I think it's Lopesy_16.
I'm going to go with that. You'll find it. You'll probably find it somehow. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But yeah, so today is going to be a big episode. We're going to do our AL preview. So we're going to do AL preview this week. By 2 weeks from now, we're going to do the NL preview, as well as probably do a little recap of the World Baseball Classic, which is set to start tonight. Another dating of this recording, as well as kind of our playoff picks. But for now, we're going to do the AL. And before we get to that, we are going to do just a little recap of what we've seen so far in spring training. So first, I mainly wanted to speak to the rule changes that have now been in effect for the past couple weeks, namely the pitch clock and shift restrictions. Chris, what are some of your early thoughts watching some of these pitch clock games?
Yeah, I think it's really, I hate to say much ado about nothing. I think it's one of those things that because it's a brand new rule that, you know, and this isn't anything new that anyone has said or hasn't said or anything, but it's just, it's going to seem, you know, the mistakes are going to seem really, really crazy right now. And then all of a sudden it's just going to normalize and you're probably going to see like one or two, if that, a month, you know, pitch clock violations. I will say the ones that have been crazy to me are the ones where the pitcher is kind of walking around the rubber for a little bit and the batter isn't in the box. And then once the pitcher like toes the rubber, the batter gets in, and then the batter gets called an automatic ball. I think that those ones are insane. But for the most part, you know, pitch clock's fine. Bases, cool. You know, running seems to be up. That's cool. I enjoy that. Shift seems like fine. I love the whole Red Sox thing that they were doing the other day. That's funny to me, but you're not going to see that very often. I think overall, all of them are pretty decent enough changes, you know, so.
Yeah, and I would agree, too. I think that the main one that you saw with kind of the ridiculous violation of the pitch clock was with Eric Hosmer, who, like, was in the box but wasn't, attentive and ready to receive the pitch, face the pitcher in that time, so he got hit with the automatic strike. So I think it's going to be something where, like, you know, in every year of the NBA, when they announce their new points of emphasis for officiating, in the first couple weeks of the season, and we also saw this in baseball with the sticky stuff regulation, the first couple weeks of the season, yeah, it's strict. You're going to see a guy get knocked out. Well, obviously not in this case ejected, but like when they did the sticky stuff, you saw guys getting ejected. You know, you saw some guys flipping out and stuff like that. But as the time goes on, not only are players going to adjust to it, but I feel like umpires are not going to be as strict with it. I've seen some where Max Scherzer got, it was supposed to be a double play, like if the ball just stayed in play, but they called it an automatic ball because he like went into his pitching just at zero, like just as it hit zero and stuff like that. I feel like is not going to have that hard of a, you know, like that much of a hard and fast line. I think it'll be a lot like the play clock in football, where sometimes you'll see the play clock go to zero, but there's not calling a delay of game. They let them snap it. They give them like a little bit. I think that that's what's going to happen here eventually. And then, you know, by May or June, nobody's even going to think about it with the pitch clock. And as far as the shift restrictions go, I think it's pretty fun to see what the Red Sox did. And it's something that like, yeah, this is spring training. This is the time you get to experiment with that, you know, that way of playing. And I don't know how many people are going to actually go through in the season and do this stuff, but it's something that like, at least now, rather than before without the shift restrictions, there's that little bit of risk reward there. You know, you move your third baseman over to short right field to get a lefty, and he hits a ground ball to the down the third baseline. Your left fielder was still there. That's sometimes a double, most of the time a single. Now, if you keep everybody in the infield and then shift your left fielder over to, you know, to short right field, then all of a sudden, if somebody hits a pop-up to, you know, mid-tier left field, then that's a double, sometimes, depending on how it rolls, maybe even a triple. So that puts in some real risk-reward and kind of adds to the strategy of it. You know, I think that these teams are smart. They're going to keep finding ways to get around these rules, and that could be one of them. But once again, it's also just something where there's going to be kind of this push and pull as to, you know, what you're gaining in trying to get that extra fielder to guard a Joey Gallo short single versus what you're giving up, depending on if he could take it the other way to the outfield. Because now he just doesn't need a ground ball. Now he could even just hit a pop-up to left field. Yeah. And there's a decent shot it could fall.
Yeah. That's it. Really, really what I got. You know, I think it's just insane. I don't think you're going to see it very often. You know, maybe you're going to see it with the Gallows and stuff like that. But I just think it's an interesting time. And like you said, this is the time to do it. So.
Exactly. But I think that kind of does it on what we feel about the rule changes. Now we're going to go on to the bulk of this podcast, which is going to be, like I said, a preview of all the AL teams. Now, what we're going to do here is I have collected, obviously, all of the teams in the AL currently, sectioned them off by their divisions. And then with each division, we're going to go 5-1 based on their projections. Now, what I did for these projections, I have set an over-under. And basically what I took is I took Fangraphs's, which I think is maybe more realistic in that they run so many simulations, but on the end, you know, on the whole, their win totals are a little lower versus Pacoda, which is Baseball Prospectus's projection system, which skews a little higher. So what I did to kind of get the best of both worlds, Jesus, I can't talk today. I just combined the two and then took the average of them. So that's what we're going to roll with as far as our over-under. So we're going to do, you know, brief overview of their offseason for each of the teams, and then pick their over-under, and then pick one thing that we're looking forward to, whether it's just a player or a storyline, one thing we're looking forward to with each team. Going to be tough for some of these teams, but we'll try to make it through. So I will give you, Chris, the pick of the litter. What division do we want to start with?
Might as well just start at the top. I already got the AL East open, so let's do AL East.
Okay. Yeah, going to the AL East, starting with the AL East. This is probably the most we'll have to say about some of these divisions, because this is one of those 1-5, all teams are at least good divisions, I would say, or at least the highest ceiling of each team in the division compared to the other two. So we're going to start off at the bottom here with the Baltimore Orioles. Now, the Baltimore Orioles are coming off of a surprise season in which they won 83 games. You know, they called up Adley Rutschman about a month or two into the season, and he absolutely balled out. I believe finished second in Rookie of the Year voting, had a great season. They got a lot of really good pitching performances, especially out of that bullpen. He had the rise of guys like Felix Bautista. You know, and then just some guys show some decent promise in starts. He had a good stretch from people like Dean Kremer and stuff like that. Overall, just kind of a really exciting team, really fun team. One of those kind of really surprise stories in how much they, you know, I popped off and really improved in the season. And a team, and another year where they were really just expected to be the Orioles, be a 70-win team maybe. Now this year, they projections-wise, they're a little low again at 74.5 wins. Key additions I have, and this is just what I grabbed off of FanGraphs. If I'm missing any, please let me know. Key additions were Cole Irvin, Adam Frazier, James McCann, and Franchy Cordero. And some of the key losses, at least the one I was able to find really, was Jordan Lyles. Now, looking into this, Chris, what are your overall thoughts on Baltimore heading into this year?
Yeah, I mean, we had talked about it, you know, previously. I really do think that the Orioles are going to be a very fun team to watch this year. And I think that they're going to be someone that I'm gonna actively, you know, source out some of their games and have it up on MLB TV or something, you know. So I think, you know, they're a young team. Obviously, you're gonna see players like, you know, Gunnar Henderson up. You're going to see players, obviously, like Adley Rutschman. But then you also have some of their mainstays that have been there but are still young. You know, I think the oldest player that's projected to be in their starting lineup is Adam Frazier at 31 years old. You know, so it's just a very interesting young team with some real promising talent. You got Santander and Mountcastle, which are going to give you some power in the middle of their lineup. Their pitching. One of the free agents that they did pick up that you might have missed on the key additions was Kyle Gibson. So not that that's very exciting or anything, but, you know, Kyle Gibson being there, Cole Irvin, and then, like you said, Bradish, Kramer, Rodriguez bring some interesting stuff. The one thing that I will say that I do want to highlight and I want to bring up as to why they might be, you know, really fun this year is they might see John Means back this year. You know, he went out on TJ. He got the surgery on April 27th of last year. So that he should be starting, you know, rehab and starting to get back into the swing of things soon, sometime this year. Maybe I'm completely wrong on that one. But I think, you know, you add John Means into this mix and this Baltimore Orioles team is interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that one of the big things about this team is their youth. You know, you're finally going to see probably Grayson Rodriguez come up and be a fixture in this rotation, who has really just been a phenomenal prospect for his whole entire kind of minor league career there, was maybe looking to get a call up late in the year, but suffered a bit of an injury, I believe, down the stretch. So I think you're finally going to see him there. As we mentioned, Gunnar Henderson was really, really good in his short time up in the bigs last year. Sure, he's going to continue on that. And then they also just have, you know, like down the list, a couple really solid prospects that could see more time this year. You know, you have guys like Kyle Stowers, DL Hall in the pitching department. I know guys like Mike Bauman have gotten some buzz. Maybe it's just because he's has the same name as now FanGraphs writer Michael Bauman. So maybe that's why I know him and not because he's actually much of a prospect. Yeah, I think that this is a good team. One thing I am looking forward to, and this might be my storyline, is if they're doing well heading towards the deadline. We have seen multiple quotes from this organization and this ownership group talking about how content they are with where they're at currently. You know, they feel that they're kind of ahead of schedule and don't really need to do much, as evidenced by their really quiet offseason coming off of a season where they were contending for a wild card spot, which is shocking to me. Well, not necessarily shocking to me because it's owners, but, you know, a little surprising at the least. So I wonder if they're in a position to make a splash, if they're going to finally use some of this incredible prospect capital that they have to get somebody, you know, that is, you know, to get some pitching, especially star level pitching. I wonder if that's something that they'll look to, or if they'll just rest on their laurels again and say, hey, you know, we're a year or two ahead of schedule. We can kind of chill on this and not have to think about it too much. What is your thing you're looking forward to out of this Orioles team?
Yeah, I think honestly, it's really just the youth of the team. You know, I think I think maybe you get a full season out of Santander, you know, and I think that this team is just going to be fun. You know, I really hate to say that the thing that I'm looking forward to is all of it. You know, I just think that they're going to be a fun team. I don't think that they're going to win the division, but I think that they're going to put up, you know, a decent fight, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So now we get to our last part of this team, the projections. So like I said, the mix of Pecota and Fangraphs has them at 74.5 wins. Chris, are you taking the over or the under?
I think that's an easy over to me. Maybe not easy, but I think it's an easy over. I don't see that they're worse than last year's team. So.
Yeah, I think that it's maybe just the overall disappointment and the fact that they did kind of overperform in that year. I think it's kind of just the general lack of excitement around the new additions that they've made to this team that are causing that to be that low. I would take the over, but that is also just because the under would mean that they're basically a 90 loss team, and I just don't see that with the baseline that they've set up. So first off, I'm going to try marking down to these to see if I remember them come the end of the season to see if we're correct. So I will start that off by saying that we both agree, and the Orioles were taking the over. So just a second here. And then we're going to go on to our next team here, the Boston Red Sox, who kind of an up and down off season. It had the low lows of losing somebody like Xander Bogaerts, who's been in the organization for a lot of time, won multiple World Series is there, to some really high highs. I think they actually, as far as the people they picked up, had a pretty good off season. You know, picking up guys like Kenley Jansen, Chris Martin, obviously extending Rafael Devers, going into wading into the waters of picking up some of the players that are posted from Japan and picking up Masataki Yoshida, taking flyers on guys like Corey Kluber and Adam Duvall. I think it was a really solid offseason, but they did lose some stuff other than Xander Bogaerts, losing Nate Eovaldi, Rich Hill, Matt Barnes, Franchy Cordero, and Tommy Pham off of a team that went 78-84. Chris, what's your general temperature on the Sox?
I think it's the I agree with everything that you just said. I think that, you know, the additions that they made are some pretty good additions. You know, I think that the loss of Xander, the loss of Eovaldi, you know, those are going to be big hits to the team. I think that my overall, you know, optimism for the Orioles is met by, you know, kind of overall pessimism for the Red Sox this year. But
yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm in, and we're both, as we mentioned, Northeast people, so we're around Red Sox fans all the time. But I think that while it's kind of been the opposite for you, it's caused them to be a little more sour on them. I think I'm a little bit higher on them. Now, mind you, not as like an actual contender. I don't think that this is a wild card team. I think that this is a decent stepping stone. You know, obviously the injury to Trevor Story hurts them a lot, especially because they were going to try to play him at shortstop, I think, this year, but I mean, his arm is not what it used to be, so I don't know if shortstop was going to be the thing for him. But I think it's a decent team. You know, I'm maybe spoiling this. I'm probably going to take the over, but probably at like an 82, 83 win team, kind of like what the Orioles were last year. I think that there's that potential there for a decent team that's in the mix in like August and September for that third wild card spot. And, you know, like I said, the lineup isn't crazy. Aside from Devers, it's really just solid. Top to bottom, you know, I mean, Christian Arroyo and Reese McGuire maybe aren't the best at their positions. But I think just in general, Kike Hernandez at short, he has shown some prowess defensively kind of all over the place, and then had a down season last year, but in general is a solid bat. Alex Verdugo had another down season, but in general has been very good since coming out into the league. And then once again, you know, Rafael Devers is incredible. Justin Turner is one of the more consistent hitters. He recently got hit in the face with a pitch recently, so hopefully he is getting better and will be ready for around spring training, not spring training, opening day. And then the pitching, starting rotation is solid, but has potential to really go down. You know, as Chris Sale is potentially an ace, but has had a lot of injury concerns recently. So I think that they are, you know, I guess like a lot of rotations, a couple injuries away from really kind of struggling there. But Corey Kluber and then Nick Pivetta rounding out with Tanner Houck and Fangraphs has Cutter Crawford. I believe it will probably be Brian Bayo, who I think is really solid and showed a lot of promise down the stretch last year. But this is also a pretty solid bullpen. Now, my player I'm looking forward to for this year is Tristan Casas. Tristan Casas got a little bit of some run in at first base last year to end out the season. I think he's a really good player, has a really good approach at the plate. I believe hit under 200 last year, but in general was a solid eye, had a good approach, and some really nice pop. I think he could be a 25 to 27 homer guy, and I really like him. I think he has potential to be one of the three or four best hitters on this team and have a real shot at, you know, potentially being a rookie of the year guy.
Yeah, you know, I think that the, like I said, I just have kind of like a kind of overall bleh, you know. I just don't think that the pitching is interesting, you know. I struggle to see Kluber and Sale staying healthy. Paxton already has, you know, an injury bug there, so you're talking, you know, some of your better pitchers there are gonna, you know, potentially be on the shelf for some time this year. I mean, you do have, obviously, Pivetta and Huck there, and yeah, they'll probably be good, and they'll probably be there, but I don't know how much they're going to anchor that that rotation down. So I struggle to see the wins there. What I do think that is going to be interesting when it comes to this Red Sox team is the fact that the schedule changes this year are going to lead to a little bit more even playing against the whole league. Which is going to means that it's going to make them play less against the AL East itself. So that might actually be a benefit to them. But I still don't see it. I don't know. I think interesting to me, my interesting, you know, piece for this year is going to be, seeing what their outfield is going to do. You know, and that's just all three of the projected starters there. So, I have Masataka Yoshida. I think he's going to be a very interesting piece. You know, I think he's going to be cool to watch. He is a little older, I noticed. He is 29. I didn't actually notice that. A little older. I'm 29. But, you know, I think
over the fucking hill.
Just you know, get a wash.
You should retire tomorrow.
I think he's going to be fun to see, obviously. Verdugo, you know, just hopefully getting out there and just having a pretty solid. Verdugo's always been pretty solid. And then Adam Duvall, you know, Duvall's been someone that I've actually always really liked, even though he's been on teams that I should hate pretty much his whole career. You know, I've always kind of liked Duvall, as he seems kind of like an underdoggy player to me. You know, he'll get you 20-something home runs and not really do anything in the average department, but at least he'll hit him out of the park, and I think he's going to be fun there in Boston, but I still just don't see it. I don't know.
You had a lot of beef for the mid-2010 Cincinnati Reds?
I guess I might have. Yeah, I didn't even think about the major team. I just think about Atlanta, and he was on Miami for a little bit, right?
Just stewing watching. Yeah, he was on Miami for a little bit. Just stewing watching prime Joey Votto as a Mets fan. Yeah, I didn't mention Duvall. I think he's coming off of a bit of a down year, but he is, you know, perhaps underrated. He won the Gold Glove. He's a really good fielder out there. So I think that especially with some of the defensive deficiencies that guys like Verdugo, and I don't know if this is, you know, I don't know where the data is to back this up, but from what I've heard, Masataka Yoshida is not like an incredible defender out there in left. So I think that he's going to be more of kind of a defensive anchor out there in center field, plus having that power potential. So I don't know. Once again, this is a team that I'll take the over for, but maybe at like 83 wins. Chris, what's your final?
This one's hard for me. I guess, and I don't want my Red Sox fans to hate me here. I'm going to go the under on this, but I think they're going to get like 80 wins. You know, like I see it right there.
So essentially like a push.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. So I just realized that we've now spent 20 minutes talking about two of the 15 teams on this list, so this feels like the John Mulaney sketch where he's doing the happy birthday card and you put a big ass A and a big ass H on the list, and then you realize you have no space to put the PPY in there. So we're gonna try to fit that in. We might go a little bit quicker on the rest of these teams now, just kind of realizing, feeling it out. So now we're gonna go to the Tampa Bay Rays. This is a team that confounds projections everywhere. just in the sense that they really did not add much to a team that was already kind of mid. And then they're, so right now, as far as the mixture between Pacoda and Fangraphs, they're at 86.5 wins is the over-under. They were 86 and 76 last year. Once again, just kind of a mid Tampa Bay Rays team. And one of the, I would say, least fun to watch Tampa Bay Rays teams. I didn't really watch too much of them. And then even when I did, it was just like, God, this is like Rays baseball kind of at its worst. You know, I was an enjoyer of some of those like 2020 teams when they went to the World Series. And obviously Randy Arozarena was hitting it big. But yeah, overall, just kind of like, the only thing I could think to say of it is mid. As far as additions, they extended Pete Fairbanks, Yandy Diaz, and Jeffrey Springs, but the only real addition they made was Zach Eflin. And then losses have been David Peralta, Corey Kluber, Mike Zunino, Kevin Kiermaier, G-Man Choi, JP Fireisen, and for the time being, Tyler Glasnow, who suffered another injury, a setback. So I don't know if that's going to be anything extended, but, you know, just something to keep in mind. Now, this is still a decent team. Brandon Lau had a down year, but as one of their better hitters, could be a breakout candidate again. Wander Franco struggled again in his sophomore season. Randy Arozarena was good. Yandy Diaz was really good, as we mentioned. Got some MVP buzz. And then Isaac Paredes was a pretty solid hitter. Now, the big thing with them is always their bullpen. They're going to pull out 17 people who throw 95 with a nasty sink slider. But they finally have somewhat of a pitching rotation with Shane McClanahan, Drew Rasmussen, Eflin Springs, and rounding it out with when he gets back, Glasnow. I think as far as just going over it, I will just go right to your thing you're looking forward to about this team.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing I'm looking forward to is going to be Wander Franco. I want to see him, you know, play a full season and see what he can do at the top of this lineup. And is he going to, you know, kind of sing the songs of the next Mike Trout, or is he going to, you know, kind of fall down there? But I'd love to see, you know, Wander Franco play baseball.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. That's actually kind of where I was going to go for that pick. On my thing I'm looking forward to, I was looking forward to Wander Franco, who once again was phenomenal in his rookie season, played towards the back end of the year and in the playoffs in 2021, was really, really good. Had a down year, had some bad injury luck last year, so hopefully looking to bounce back from that. I guess to not pick something that you picked, I'll go with Brandon Lau, who's a guy that I really like. One of the better hitting second basemen in the last, like, 10 years, at least when he was, like, really hitting well in the past couple years. But once again, another injury-riddled down season. Hopefully he can make a comeback and, you know, be the 2021, you know, 2020-level Brandon Lau that we saw. So that's who I'm looking forward to watching this year. What is your pick for the over-under? 86.5, once again.
I think I'm just going to go under on this one, but I think it's going to be kind of another push there. But I just don't, nothing sparks joy with this team. So
I think that that's just kind of the vibe about Tampa, just in general. You know, bad stadium, kind of cool uniforms, but just not a lot of players you know and love and recognize. But it gets results. But this is the year I think that I finally go against the grain and doubt the Tampa Bay Rays, and I'm taking the under. They look like an 82 win team to me. Moving on to the second team in the projections, the Toronto Blue Jays. Last year finished 92-70, made it to the wild card, blew an 8-1 lead to the Seattle Mariners in game two to get swept in the wild card. As far as people they've added, Eric Swanson, Chris Bassett, Kevin Kiermaier, Dalton Varsho, Brandon Belt, and Chad Green. Now, their losses come with Lourdes Gurriel, Gabriel Moreno, Teoscar Hernandez, and Ross Stripling. The over-under was set by Fangraphs and Pacoda at 88.5 wins. This one I feel is kind of low. But, Chris, what is something that you're looking to about this Toronto Blue Jays team?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm going to pick one of the guys that I feel like everyone always wants to look forwards to for this team. I'm going to pick Bo Bichette. I really like Bo Bichette as a player. I think he's an interesting, you know, kind of bat there. I think he kind of does everything well, plays decent short. You know, I just think he's going to be, he's a good player for this team, a good, you know, I feel like that's a very dumb thing to say because obviously he's very good, but I feel like it's just you're you know, we're really starting to see just one of the stars in the game really emerge. And I think he's going to be just kind of that solid go-to guy that we see year in and year out. So I really want to see what Bobichet will do this year.
It's a good pick. What I'm looking forward to this year, and I'll mention that they have now a pretty solid rotation, especially with the addition of Chris Bassett. You know, who knows what you're going to get out of Jose Barrios this year, who was very inconsistent last year. And then that bullpen with the addition of Swanson is decent, but also is pretty much pretty similar to the bullpen that blew an 8-1 lead to the Seattle Mariners in the AL wildcard. The thing I'm looking forward to and the thing I'll be monitoring about this team is the catcher tandem. So this catcher tandem that they have is Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen, who both had kind of surprising, really, really good years last year. Kirk was an all-star, and Danny Jansen potentially should have been, had a really good year last year. I just don't know. It feels like they both kind of came out of nowhere. Jansen has been okay, but really just kind of like a decent backup catcher for a while before this breakout season. And then Kirk was not really like a huge prospect, was decent in the 2020 season, and then really had this breakout in 2022. And they had to make a big choice with one of their top prospects being Gabriel Moreno, a catcher, and they chose to trade Moreno rather than Jansen or Kirk. I always kind of felt like it should, like it was going to be Jansen, and they were going to go with the prospects there. But that's the one thing that I'm really looking forward to, is that can this tandem keep up what they, you know, build on what they did last year? I think it's really a question because they just didn't have that pedigree heading into this year, but were just so good. And I think that that was a big reason why they were a 92-win team when they were really kind of showing some inconsistencies last year. I think that this is a pretty solid team. It's a pretty easy over for me on the projections at 88.5. What do you say?
Yeah, I'll agree. I think that all the above, I'm going to get it over, and I think they're going to at least get 90 wins. So.
Perfect. And then now we will round off the AL East with the New York Yankees, simultaneously at some points the hottest team in baseball last year, and then for like a month, that was crazy looking back on it, they just had a month where they were like legitimately like a 6 or 7 game under 500 team. Yep. And it really kind of, there was a lot of buzz like, hey, could this team, you know, challenge the 110 wins area? And then they didn't even finish with 100 this year. As far as the offseason goes, they kept Aaron Judge, which I think is obviously the biggest part. You'd consider that a win of an offseason regardless. Well, Yankees fans probably don't, but I think you would consider that a win of an offseason regardless. And then they added Carlos Rodon and picked back up Tommy Canley. And then as far as the losses go, Matt Carpenter, Aroldis Chapman, Jameson Taillon, and Andrew Benintendi. Chris, your overall vibe and thing you're looking forward to on this Yankees team?
Yeah, I mean, it's another kind of weird one. Obviously, they're really good. You know, I think I'll just start off there. I think that their, you know, their offense is one of the best offenses in the game. And their starting pitching is disgusting, like in the very good way. Their starting pitching is nasty. What I do find interesting about this team is I'm not super into their bullpen this year. You know, I think that they're kind of going for the hoping that their starters kind of go a little deeper and then they don't have to hold many close games. You know, I think you have Clay Holmes, and I always liked Clark Schmidt. You know, maybe it's a MLB The Show thing, but you know, I always liked Schmidt. You know, they have some other interesting pieces there, but I'm just kind of a little bit down on their bullpen. And then looking at their team, yeah, like I do have some pieces where I'm kind of questioning, but overall I'll trust the process here. But I'm kidding. I think they're just a very good team. So
got it. Did you have anything that you, what was the thing that you were particularly looking forward to?
Oh, sorry. I think particularly what I'm looking forward to is going to be what Rodon and Garrett Cole at the top of this rotation do. You know, I think, it's obviously one of the best 1-2 punches in the league. You know, and it's something that is just gonna, they're gonna need to rely on them in order to be, you know, the mainstay power horse that they want to be. So it's gonna be interesting to see what they do.
Got it. I kind of go on the opposite of what you said in terms of the offense. Obviously the top end talent is there. Aaron Judge won MVP last year. Anthony Rizzo, I think, is pretty good. Stanton, when healthy, is still good. But aside from that, it's just kind of, I don't know. It's not something that I look at with a lot of excitement. You know, Glaber can be iffy. Josh Donaldson was bad last year, and so was Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. I'm pretty sure those two might be the most hated men in New York right now. But yeah, I don't know. Looking at this lineup, it's not too inspiring. Oh, Aaron Hicks as well. They make a pretty good trio of people that New Yorkers hate right now. So the thing I'm looking towards with this team is what they're going to do with their prospect situation. Now, I believe they've put kind of, at least for the moment, their vote of confidence in Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. There was some things about looking at him in left field, which I don't get. You already played him at shortstop, which is his best position, and that did not go well for you last year. So why not put him in a position that he's, I don't think, has ever played at the professional level? I'd have to double check that, but yeah, I mean, as far as shortstop goes, they have a couple top prospects that they can look to in Oswald Peraza, and then maybe down the line this year, Anthony Volpe. Hasn't gotten a ton of burn, I believe, at the high levels of the minors, but is a very exciting prospect for them. So I wonder if that's eventually just going to become them. And then they also have Oswaldo Cabrera, who's kind of like an everyman. Had some moments last year, had some exciting things, especially in the playoffs, but overall is just kind of a gadget player. You kind of stick them wherever. So I wonder how they're going to use the benefit of their prospects, you know, to their advantage this year, you know, in terms of hope maybe Oswald Peraza picks it up this year and is really good, you know, really good, like his prospect profile looked to be. And then they don't have to play Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and that kind of figures it out from there. Overall, I think it's a solid team. I really like their pitching. I am very iffy on their hitting, but I wonder how the prospects will fare into that. I think that that's the big key with this team. Over under at 93.5, what do you take?
It's hard to... This one's actually, I think, hard. I might take the under on this one, but I think it's going to be like a 91, 92 or something like that. I just, like you're saying, you know, looking at this, you know, starting lineup here, it is very top heavy. And then, you know, my already thoughts on the bullpen, and it's really just their kind of starting pitching there. I really don't know. I think that the Blue Jays might kind of take this division. So
there we go. All right. So I'm trying to think of how far over I'm thinking for the Blue Jays, because I want to go over for the Yankees, but like a slight over, like a 94-95 win team. I just think that their rotation is so good, and I do actually kind of like their bullpen, especially at the top end. I don't know. I think I will go slight over. I think that that's going to be a close race between the Blue Jays and Yankees this season for the division. But yeah, like 94-95 wins. So that'll do it for the AL East. I'm going to skip over the AL Central. I think I'm just going to move that to the bottom of the list, because I don't know if I mentioned it earlier in the podcast. I think that's going to be something that we can get done in like 10 minutes. I know. I just like the AL Central. It does not move me a lot. So we're going to move over to the AL West, starting at the bottom with the Oakland A's.
DJ, I'll do this for you. I'll be very quick. There's nothing to talk about here. I actually don't even think there's anything exciting to look at. I'm not even positive that there are exciting prospects to look at here. I really don't know. I think, honestly, my exciting piece here is I want to see Trevor May pitch. You know, I want to see him pitch and then get traded. I don't, you know, I just think it's, I'm looking at this team and I'm just like, I don't think that there's one person here that I'm like, yeah, I really want to see this person play. You know, maybe Christian Pache. You know, I'm even looking at some of their prospects and I'm just not like in, I don't know, maybe I should know more better names here, but yeah, I'm just kind of not feeling anything about this team. I know this is a stupid thing to say, but they're projected, you have them at 66 wins. I'm going to go the under there and say my exciting thing is Trevor May.
Yeah, I'm going to take the under. I'm even looking at their minor league kind of depth, and I don't even see anything considerable to be, like, excited for. There's Kevin Smith, who I'm pretty sure at one point when he was, like, in high school tried to follow me on Instagram once. So there's that. Huh. But that's my exciting thing. Will Kevin Smith follow me back on Instagram this year? In a slightly more serious one, I guess my thing that I'm looking to is if they'll move the team, if there's going to be any considerable movement on if they're moving the team. They've been looking at it a lot and submitting a lot of stuff. I think that I don't know if Rob Manfred said that they were close to it or if they're not going to do it, but I kind of think that that situation's eventually going to reach a breaking point because I just don't see any light there. Taking the under, moving on. The Texas Rangers, a team that we've talked about before, 68-94 last season, projected at 80.5 wins. Key additions, I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy, Jacob DeGrom, as well as Andrew Haney, Will Smith, not the catcher, Nate Eovaldi, and Jake Odorizzi. They basically lost Matt Moore. Chris, overall vibe, the thing you're looking forward to about this team?
Yeah, I think this is where, honestly, I think this is where this division gets real interesting. You know, I see the Texas Rangers as the fourth best team in this division, and I still think they're actually pretty good. You know, looking at their offense, I think that they have a pretty interesting team. You know, I don't love guys like Robbie Grossman in there and stuff like that. You know, I don't love that Brad Miller's getting a bunch of play, but you know, I think like your top of the lineup here in Semien Seager and Lau, and then even going down to Aroldis Garcia, that's a pretty good, you know, top of the lineup. Now, yes, it gets a little bit iffy here and there underneath that, but I think that's a pretty fun top of the lineup. Obviously, and we talked about it, and it's really what I'm interested in. Their starting rotation is going to be very fun to watch this year. You know, is DeGrom going to stay healthy? You know, is Eovaldi a good pitcher? You know, I think he is. You know, I think their whole team, their whole starting rotation is built of all of those guys that you're like, wow, that's a great, you know, potential player that's going to fly under the radar and be like a great 2-3 starter or something, other than Jacob DeGrom, who's, you know, the best pitcher in the world. But, you know, Martin Perez, John Gray, Nathan Eovaldi, and Andrew Haney, I think they're a very good rotation. You know, we see them here at 80.5 win projections. I think I'm going to go the over on this one, but not by much. But I think that they're a fun team, and it could be interesting to see them with a few more pieces in their offense. So,
yeah, so looking at it, I know I was the one that brought them up in our sleepers discussion. Looking at it, I'm not as into that decision as I was. That outfield is terrible. Short of Adolis Garcia, that outfield is bad. DH position, Brad Miller, that's bad. Josh Young, promising prospect. Could see a lot of good out of him. And then the rotation is good. Bullpen is eh. I think that they've gotten good performances from guys like Brock Burke. But Matt Moore was actually a pretty big part of that bullpen last year. Will not be here this year. Jose Leclerc, I don't even remember the last time I actually watched him pitch. He's been up and down with injuries and stuff like that. So I will have two over-unders for this. I'm going to take under for the wins. Over-under 17.5 Jacob DeGrom starts.
Shit. Under.
I'm going to take an optimistic over. If they can get 20 starts out of him, that's a win for them. But I'm going to say they're like a 77-75 win team this year, and I'm going to take the under. Moving on to the third place projection, Seattle Mariners. Super exciting year for them last year. 90-72, made it all the way to the wild card, played for 18 damn innings in the ALDS in one game against the Houston Astros, who we'll get to later in this preview. And then this year they're projected for 82.5 wins. I think this is one that they were really low on as far as both Pecota and Fangraphs were. I think Fangraphs had them on like 80 wins. But as far as their additions, they added Teoscar Hernandez, Colton Juan, AJ Pollock, and then just little things, Justin Topa, Tommy La Stella, stuff around the margins. As far as the losses, they lost, as we mentioned earlier, Adam Frazier, Mitch Haniger, Carlos Santana, Eric Swanson, Kyle Lewis, Jesse Winker, and Abraham Toro. Chris, thing you're looking forward to about the 2023 Seattle Mariners?
Yeah, obviously I'm really intrigued to see Julio Rodriguez play. You know, is Kelnick going to be better this year, and is he actually going to, you know, catch wind? But the person that I'm really looking forward to is Luis Castillo. I'd love to see him, you know, full season there, and just see what he can do. I've always loved Luis Castillo. You know, I think he's a great pitcher. I think he's one of those guys that is just a stud, that kind of gets a little underplayed a little bit in the rankings and stuff. But I think he's always going to be there par for one really bad year in Cincinnati where, you know, Eugenio Suarez was his starting shortstop there. Like, that's insane to me. You know, and now he's here again. But at least he's not playing short this year. So yeah, it's just one of those things where I'd love to see Luis Castillo full year under his belt. You know, I think they're a fun team. So
got it. So I'm gonna go with the obvious pick here, Julio Rodriguez. Watching him play more and more this year is going to be super duper exciting. Very much looking forward to that. Overall, a very good team that I like a lot. Was super fun to watch last year and will continue to be super fun to watch this year, I believe. I guess if I'm going to pick something other than the obvious pick, watching Matt Brash throw knuckle curveballs all the time, that knuckle curveball is super nasty, and he's not somebody that really sticks around in like the starting rotation. They tried him a little bit there, but his control is just not there right now. But that knuckle curve is insane. So I will also set that at whatever I can watch him pitch and throw that knuckle curve. That'll be my other thing I'm looking forward to as an underrated thing. 82.5 feels like an easy over. I assume you'll agree.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
All right. So going on to the second place team, the second place projected Los Angeles Angels. Here we go again. Last year, 73-89. Geez, almost a 90 loss team. And Mike Trout played, I think, 120 games. Shohei Ohtani was second place in MVP again. God, this team. Actually good offseason. I'll say that. Actually good offseason. Added Gio Urshela, Tyler Anderson, Hunter Renfro, Brandon Drury, and then smaller set Brett Phillips and aforementioned Matt Moore. Only really lost Michael Lorenzen, Matt Duffy, Kurt Suzuki, I guess. I didn't even remember that he was still playing. I don't even think he was still playing, to be honest with you. Thing you're looking forward to with the 2023 Los Angeles Angels?
When we had initially talked about this team, I did think that they were going to be, I had them as my sleepers, you know, and I do still think that, you know, I think that it's obviously very difficult to picture them even coming close to winning this division because they're not. But I do think, you know, that fighting for a wild card is going to be something that this team can do. Looking at their offense, I am, you know, struggling to see real big, great things happening with this team. You know, I do think that Brandon Drury and Hunter Renfro really do kind of really help this team, you know. And then I'm really hoping that that Mike Trout can stay healthy for the full year, you know. Shohei can be there, hoping that Rendon, you know, is not the player that he was last year, obviously. You know, so I think that this team is interesting. I think that some of their downfalls, you know, in trusting in like Logan O'Hop and, you know, all players like that, I think that there's some struggle there. But I think that this is an interesting team, and I really want to see just Mike Trout. That's going to be my look for, my thing to look out for this year. I really want to see Mike Trout, you know, play. Yeah.
Yeah, this lineup is just a lot of like, well, if he keeps going, like Taylor Ward, if he keeps playing like he did last year, Brandon Drury, keeps playing like he did last year. Logan Ohapi, I think, is actually one of the top catching prospects in the league, so I'm excited to see what he can do. As a proponent of foolish baseball, I was always a big fan of Max Stassi, but I think that he will be probably seceding the full-time starter job there. I don't know. Thing I'm looking forward to here. You know what? I'll say the obvious one. The Shohei Ohtani guy? I don't know if he pitches and then also hits. I'm looking forward to when he gets traded to the Mets, when they falter and then they extend him for 10 years, $600 million.
One thing that I do find very interesting about this team, I didn't know this until looking at their roster right now. All lefties other than Shohei Ohtani in their starting rotation. That's interesting to me. Don't see that often.
Definitely. So my heart wants the over, my head wants the under. So I'm going to take the under. I'd rather be wrong than get burnt again.
I'm going to say the over and not talk about it any further than that.
All right. Going to the top team in the AL West, the Houston Astros, the reigning champions of MLB. And really an uneventful offseason for the reigning champs. Obviously, it doesn't have to be too eventful if you're coming off of that kind of championship run. But they lost Justin Verlander, obviously the reigning Cy Young, as well as Yuli Gurriel, Trey Mancini, and Christian Vasquez. But they added Jose Abreu. And then I just put Michael Brantley health because he was out for, I'm pretty sure, most, if not all of last year. And if he's in, that is a pretty big thing for them. As far as their lineup goes, although they really didn't need it. It's kind of just like a to the victor go the spoils. Just too many good players on this team. Chris, what's the thing you're looking forward to?
I mean, you know, you say it was kind of a quiet offseason, but I think getting Jose Abreu is such a huge piece. And I really think that, you know, it's just something that is going to really solidify. I don't want to say solidify this team like they really needed it, but it keeps them really in that you know, just top tier MLB team overall. You know, they lose the Cy Young award winner and Justin Verlander, and I don't think that their rotation got, you know, really that worse.
That's the crazy thing. That's the crazy thing is that during this whole playoff run, Justin Verlander was like, they're like, he's gonna leave, and then the Astros are just like, okay,
yeah,
sure, whatever.
And what's really fun about it is that they're all homegrown guys, which is really cool. What I will say, my kind of thing that I want to look out for this year is going to be Luis Garcia. You know, a lot has been talked about because his windup is kind of seen as a balk now this year. A lot has been talked about how that's going to kind of play into his game. But I've also heard some kind of alternative takes on this that, you know, him kind of shortening up his windup is actually going to be very beneficial to him, and that he might actually see kind of some growth out of this if he can get over the just that rocking motion that he's been used to. You know, if he can kind of get into that, he's just going to unlock potentially a whole new level. So,
yeah, that was actually going to be my pick, is Luis Garcia with the pitch clock, because, listen, it did get a lot of hate because it took forever. And as a proponent of the pitch clock, I should be more against his motion, but I just loved it so much. I loved that was something, because like when he pitches from the stretch, he obviously doesn't do that. So it doesn't really, you know, affect him that much to not pitch without it. And I saw him, he pitched against the Mets in spring training. He was decent without it. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see. My actual pick though will be Hunter Brown, top prospect in the Astros org last year, 34th overall at FanGraphs this year. Had a cup of coffee last year, looked really, really good. It has some really nice stuff, a good slider, very good fastball. I think that this is the reason why they're not so upset that Justin Verlander left, because they can just slot in a top tier prospect in the pitching staff, and they'll be, I'm not going to say, you know, none the worse for it, because he's obviously not going to be as good as Justin Verlander was last year, but he's definitely going to be pretty, I think he's going to be pretty damn good. So yeah, overall the Astros pitching, because I love the Astros pitching a lot. And then if I have to pick one player, Hunter Brown. Over under at 92.5 wins, your pick?
Is it funny that this is an obvious over to me?
Yeah, I was thinking about going hot take and taking under, but then I actually looked at it again, because I thought that I don't know why, but when I was looking through this again, I thought that their over-under was at like 94 or 95, which I would have considered taking the under as like a hot take there, but at 92.5, that just kind of seems like free. I'll take that over.
Yeah.
All right, so on to the AL Central. The team, the division that like in total signed like 10 players as a collective this offseason. Starting off with the Kansas City Royals, last year 65-97, projected for 67.5 wins. I, in years past, have been a Royals optimist, but once again, they're another team that anytime I'm optimistic for them, they just take it right back down. They are bringing back the all-baby blues this year, which I'm looking forward to. I guess if that's my thing, then sure. But as far as addition goes, I mean, Franmil Reyes, Aroldis Chapman, Mike Mayers, Ryan Yarbrough, and Matt Beattie. They lost that Alberto Mondesi, Ryan O'Hearn, Michael A. Taylor. It just kind of real nothing there. So what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, it really just seems that they're kind of doing that Oakland A's, kind of chasing that team. Nothing's really jumping out. I'm not even going to go the obvious, my looking forward to this year, I'll leave the Bobby Witt Jr. to you, and I'm going to say that I'm really looking forward to Salvador Perez. He's just always been a catcher that I'm really interested in. Very funny, he's actually only 32. I feel like that's young. Maybe it's not, but
I think it's because he's just been around for a while. Like he's been around since 2014, so he's seen the meteoric rise of the Royals. And then now he's just been on the bad Royals for so long that I think it just feels like he's been around longer.
Yeah.
And catchers, I feel like they just stick around longer.
Yeah, that's true. But anyways, you know, he's just always been kind of a fantasy baseball stalwart for me. So I just love to see Salvi play and hope to see him more this year. So.
I would have let you pick Bobby Witt, because my pick is actually going to be, now that pitchers are figuring out that they can use the pitch comm, I want to see how little catchers will get to call of Zach Greinke's games, because he's already using the pitch comm a lot in his start, in his starts recently this spring, and then also he has had times before where he would call the pitches using his hands, just flashing, "Hey, we're gonna throw two to the catcher and the hitter." He's done that before, so now that he has an actual way of concealing it, we might get a game where he calls every single pitch. So that's what I'm going to look forward to. I love Zach Greinke, and I can't wait to see him call his own games. But yes, I am a big Bobby Witt Jr. guy. Obviously, he was not the pick for Rookie of the Year in a tough class behind Adley Rutschman and Julio Rodriguez, obviously. But I did want to give him some love there. I felt like he had quietly had a very good season. But yeah, no, my pick is Greinke. Over-under at 67.5, what do you pick?
Under, but whatever.
Yeah, this one is just like a, I guess, under, sure. So we'll go under on that. Another 67.5 win projected team, the Detroit Tigers. Key additions, can't believe that I had to type out key for this. Matthew Boyd, Michael Lorenzen, Matt Vierling, and Nick Baton. They lost Gregory Soto, Jaime Candelario, Andrew Chafin, Joe Jimenez, and Tucker Barnhart. Chris, do you have any thoughts on the 2023 Detroit Tigers and what you're looking forward to?
I wish I did. You know, when they had went out and got Javi Baez, they were a team where I was like, I love this. And I think that I think it's very fun to see what they're going to do, you know, mixed in with their young rotation, you know, and then that same year they got They got E-Rod, and I was like, wow, you know, they're really making investments in this team. And then they kind of just stopped. Like, I don't know. I just feel like they just didn't do anything, and they're just, like, not continuing to not do anything. You know, my thing to look forward to this year, again, kind of on the same Salvi thing, is I just love watching Miguel Cabrera play baseball. And kind of just, you know, seeing him out there, what he's retiring this year, right?
I don't know if he's officially announced that, but you kind of have to assume he's already got his 500th home run, his 300th hit. I just don't know what kind of is left.
Yeah.
There, I mean, obviously he loves the game, so there's that, but like, as far as if he's chasing any accolades, I don't know what's left for him.
Yeah, I just want to see him just take up at bats from this team, because I don't even think that their prospects even need to hit. So, like, no one on this team is that good. It's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking about my thing to look forward to. I was going to say, seeing if their youngsters could actually, you know, pick up in the rotation. But as far as updates, there's nothing concrete as to the return of Casey Mize and Tarek Skubal, who were really the two that I was looking forward to this year. Skubal was really good last year until he got hurt. And then Casey Mize has just been very up and down, their first pick in 2018. So I guess if I have to pick something, I'll go Riley Green, who was decent last year, and then actually getting some full-time run. And then seeing if Spencer Turnbull was maybe just too early of a cup of coffee there. Not Spencer Turnbull, sorry. Spencer Torkelson. Seeing if maybe Torkelson was too early of a cup of coffee there, and if he's now actually ready for taking on that full-time first baseman role. But yeah, other than that, this team sucks. Over under 67.5.
I don't know. I might do a push on this one. I might actually do a push leaning towards under, but
yeah, I'm gonna go back-to-back unders here. Third, Chicago White Sox last season, 81-81, projected for 79.5 this year. Key additions, Andrew Benintendi, Mike Clevinger, Hanser Alberto, and Elvis Andrews. They lost Jose Abreu, obviously, Johnny Cueto, and Josh Harrison. Thing you're looking forward to?
This is another insane one. This team sucks. Looking at this team, you know, I don't know. I just don't see it. You know, their pitching is interesting. You know, I know Clevinger is an ass and everything, but pitching from Cease, Lynn, Giolito, Clevinger, and Kopech, that's a pretty good rotation. You know, but their hitting is kind of just, to me, it's all over the map. You know, you obviously have your younger guys in Jimenez and Robert that are really good. You have Anderson that's really good. You want to see Andrew Vaughn kind of get some at bats there, and he's also going to be good. You know, I don't see it. It's another kind of disgusting team. You know, last year we have it at 81-81, and I think they might be, they're like the definition of a 500 team. I guess if I had to choose something that is interesting, the actual answer for me is going to be Andrew Vaughn, kind of seeing him take over that first base role, you know, kind of make Chicago put the money where their mouth is in saying that, hey, you know, we're going to let Jose Abreu walk and kind of bring up this Andrew Vaughn kid and see what he has. I believe he actually played pretty decently last year. I could be wrong, but I do think he played something pretty well last year. And it's just going to be interesting to see him kind of take over that first base. The fake thing that I'm looking forward to, he's projected to be their DH, but I really want to see Eloy in the field, just because that's always so much fun to me. He is one of the worst route runners I've ever seen in my life.
He has some highlights. He's turned, he famously turned that Christian Yelich inside the Parker, where he just ran into the netting and then just kind of chilled out there for a little bit. Yeah. That was a very fun highlight.
0% efficiency.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to mention, as far as their additions go in the pitching department, they replaced Johnny Cueto, who was actually pretty solid last year, and good vibes with Mike Clevenger, who sucked and is a bad person. So that trade-off really is bad, especially when you just said bye to, Jesus, why am I blanking on his name? There, Tony La Russa. Especially when you just said bye to Tony La Russa, who's an absolute vibe killer, which is, that's honestly the thing I'm looking forward to about this team. Seeing how the vibes are like, because they were just dire under La Russa. It was one of those things where in 2020, they were a super exciting team. You know, the vibes were high with Luis Robert, Tim Anderson, Eloy, as you mentioned, Jose Abreu, Lucas Giolito was really good that year. And then they hire La Russa and just everything goes down the shitter for him. So I'm wondering if in the Pedro Grifol era, they're going to be more just going with the flow. And I think that that's enough for me to give him the over. Now it's set at 79.5. So saying over doesn't really mean much. I think they're just going to be another 500 team this year. But yeah, I think that that's going to be the thing I'm looking forward to see if just the energy in that room, you know, among that team improves, how much it improves. Cause I think it will improve just regardless how much it will improve now that they're not working with Tony La Russa. Moving up the aisle, we have the Minnesota Twins, who last year went 78-84. As far as their additions goes, they technically added Carlos Correa in free agency. They lost him twice and then got him back. They also added Joey Gallo, Christian Vasquez, Kyle Farmer, and Pablo Lopez. As far as their key losses go, Luis Arraez, and then just Miguel Sano, Michael Fulmer, and Chris Archer, who didn't really do much for him last year, as well as Dylan Bundy, I believe, is still a free agent, but once again, didn't do much. Chris, thing you are looking forward to with this team?
Yeah, I mean, again, looking at their team, especially when we're getting off of the White Sox page, they actually scream another 500 team. That's a little bit better than the White Sox. You know, I think that that's really what it kind of boils down to. Thing that I'm interested to see this year is, can Joey Gallo kind of right last year's wrongs from New York? my favorite thing in the world is the projections have him at, they're projecting him to have 25 home runs and a 191 batting average. So that's
sounds about right.
Fun, you know, a projection under the Mendoza line is insane to me. And also though, with the 191 batting average, a 321 OBP. So they're really, really getting into those 3-2 outcomes for Gallo. But no, I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, can he kind of right whatever was wronged when he was in New York and kind of, you know, fresh face and play well in Minnesota.
Nice pick. I think what I'm going to go with, and then real quick, Lightning, over under 95.5 games, Byron Buxton.
Ooh,
I didn't actually do any research on how many games he's played in recent years. I just pulled that number out of my ass.
Yeah, I'm going to say under.
I'll be optimistic. I'll say over. But as far as my pick goes, the starting pitching, can they kind of recover? Tyler Malley was bad for them last year. Joe Ryan is good, you know, solid, but Kenta Maeda has also struggled recently, went through some injuries. And then Sonny Gray and Pablo Lopez, can this team of three starters grow to be really good? For their sake, I hope so. I mean, the good thing is that they're in a bad division, so that even though they're not facing them as often, there's still a decent amount of free wins. Bad thing, once again, they're not going to be facing the AL Central as often. So yeah, I am decently optimistic for this team, especially when they got back Correa. So I will go on the over for them. Did you make your pick?
Not on the over under, but I'll go over on them, you know.
All right. And then rounding out the entire AL preview with the Cleveland Guardians. Last year, 92-71 team really came out and shocked everybody, won the AL Central, and then lost in five games to the Yankees in the ALDS. They added Josh Bell and Mike Zunino. The only loss I really saw was Owen Miller. Once again, can correct me if I'm wrong, but I didn't see much there. Projection at 85.5 wins. Chris, thing you're looking forward to with the Cleveland Guardians?
Thing I'm looking forward to is, and maybe it's the Met in me, but I really want to see if Andrés Giménez is going to continue these steps forward that he's taking and really kind of harness the just good major league player, you know, and maybe a potential kind of star within the league. I think it's hard to be a star in Cleveland, but I mean, Lindor did it, so I don't know. I'm not trying to put him in as on the Lindor level there, but who knows? Maybe he's going to be one of those guys. I just think, you know, he had a wonderful year last year with the burn that he was given. You know, we had talked about it before. I think we might have talked about it on the pod. But it's just that has to go down as one of the most kind of good for both teams trades that has ever happened, I think, in my eyes, just because obviously Lindor is Lindor and he's been, you know, kind of going to be a mainstay in the Mets for forever. And Giménez, and to a lesser degree, but I still like seeing him succeed, Rosario there have been pretty good. So it's going to be fun to kind of watch his career shoot off from here. So
my pick for a player I'm looking forward to a lot this year is Tristan Sticks McKenzie. I love this guy. I think he's a really good pitcher. Made a really big leap last year. Made 30 starts, 2.96 ERA. One thing that I will always associate with Tristan McKenzie now is one time when Wardle was a big thing, the MLB player guessing game, they had him listed as a reliever. He has literally made 64 appearances in the MLB, in MLB, and has 60 starts. So I have no clue still why they have him listed as a reliever. Still why they had him listed as a reliever. But regardless, I digress. Really good season last year. I'm really excited to see if this year he can take a leap to being an all-star this year, I think, is a decent, not expectation to put on him, because I don't think that, you know, especially with guys like that that are still coming up, that's like expected thing out of him. But I think that that's one thing I'm looking forward to see if he can take that next leap and really kind of be the guy that when Shane Bieber starts to kind of fall off, he was really good last year again, but actually, no, he's only 27, so I'm not going to say that. I was going to say like a passing the torch thing, but then I remember that Shane Bieber is still pretty young. So he's not a passing like the torch, but if, you know, they can take the next leap to Shane Bieber and Tristan McKenzie being a 1-2 punch that you can talk about in the same breath as we mentioned earlier, a Gerrit Cole and Carlos Rodon. So I think that that's something that I'm really looking forward to for Sticks. On the over under, it was set at 85.5 wins. Chris, what are you taking?
Nah, I think it's a pretty uneventful over for this one. Yeah, I just think that someone's got to win these games in this division, and it might as well be them. So,
yeah, that's what I was going to say, too. Somebody's got to be the 89-win team that wins the division. So why not the Cleveland Guardians? All right, I think that does it with all of our teams. We'll probably get into, like I said, the whole playoff stuff in the next episode. But, yeah, I think that that was pretty good. Chris, really quick before we head out, do you want to remember a guy?
I didn't really have anyone, but I'm going to go just because Foolish Baseball regained his YouTube channel back. I don't know how he lost it, but he got it back. My remember your guy is a no all-star maker, Old Hoss Radbourne. And I'm going to
really remember him.
I don't remember him at all, but I just know him from Foolish Baseball. So
I remember the day of my high school graduation, he pitched 7 strong.
Hey, he pitched in Providence, so
remember that like it was I went to the game. It was the day after my high school graduation.
1880.
That's a fun video. I'm gonna link that actually in the description of this episode because I want everybody to watch it. That was a really fun video to watch on Old Hoss Radbourne. My pick is Joel Zumaya.
Yes, good one.
Looking back on it, a no-time all-star, I'm a little surprised because my perception of him growing up, because he was the first guy that really like threw a hunt. Oh, I'm sure there were others, but the first guy in my life that I remember that like threw 100, and that was a big thing about him. Looking back, I thought he was a lot better. He was decent, but a lot more 4 ERA seasons than I thought. Injury prone. Once heard himself playing Guitar Hero, which speaks to me and speaks to my soul a lot. I love a fellow Guitar Hero playing reliever. So yeah, that's my pick, Joel Zumaya.
Yep, the Guitar Hero thing, they actually, some people say, just was the derailment of his career.
That. Yeah, That's a shame. I'm actually pretty sure. I'm going to look this up really quickly. If it doesn't come up, forget I even said it. I'm pretty sure Guitar Hero even shouted him out in the credits in one of their games.
Oh, jeez.
Let's see. Yes, Joel Zumaya was in the credits for Guitar Hero 2 on Xbox. The credits read, and now this is from Reddit, take it with a grain of salt, first result I saw. The credits read, no pitches were harmed during the making of this game, except for one, Joel Zumaya, he had it coming. So, really like that. Shout out Joel Zumaya, shout out Guitar Hero. Real quick spurn on you, which one's your favorite Guitar Hero?
Ooh, maybe this is dumb, but the first one that comes off the top of my head is Guitar Hero 2. So I'm just gonna go with 2.
Yeah, 2 was my pick. I remember when I got my own PS2. A lot later. I got like a PS4 before I got a PS2. When I got my PS2, I bought Guitar Hero 2 and then beat it that day. So yeah, really love that game. That's my pick as well. So I think that just about does it. Any parting thoughts while we're here?
God, I really want to play Guitar Hero now.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to fire up Clone Hero again.
Oh, I might re-download it. I'm looking at my guitar right now. So yeah, that's my final thought. Go play Clone Hero. It's free. So I feel like we've already went a little too long there on the episode, but we hope you enjoyed. We hope once again that you get 5-star reviews and check everything out. Keep in tuned for the NL preview when that comes out in a couple of weeks. But until next time, hope you enjoyed and hope you have a good one.
Yep. And correction, it is Lopesy60, not underscore.
Glad we saved that in for the real heads, real ball five heads that stick around to
hour and 20 minutes.
Hour and 15 minute level. So, yeah, peace out.